Okay, before I introduce the our guest speaker, guys, please, if you can just also, everyone can come closer. This is even though it's a big room, we find it an intimate setting. Please, guys, come. We want to once again thank our sponsors. I want to thank Zach and Talia Katz for sponsoring one of the shurim. We want to thank Corey and Jonathan Glaubach in honor of Elijah. We want to thank the Glazer family, member of Avi's grandfather, Mordechai Ben Yosef. We want to thank Rena David Marilis. We want to thank Jeff Tokair and the Brew family and the merit of Refuah Shlema for Shlomo Yisrael Ben Sara. We have a distinct pleasure to have one of our dear friends and someone who comes usually at least once a year comes to speak here. He'll be back here again to represent Camp Hask, which is something some of the guys are starting to think about summers. This should be on the top of your list of considerations for the summer. A transformative kind of experience. But we're not going to talk about that now. We'll talk about that next time. Judah is somebody who, besides running Camp Hask, has also founded organization Tzoma Nafshi, which is the goal of the organization is to try to connect Jews in a deep, meaningful way to the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what Tefillah is. Tefillah is about trying to create connection in a meaningful way. We're very happy that he's able to make time. He's a busy guy. He's hard to pin down. And Baruch Hashem, he's here. And let's give him our full attention. Please put away your phones. And afterwards, we're going to daven mincha together.
I'm the right person to speak at this program today. On this Yom Yun on Tefillah. Because, not just because the Gemara says that Tefillah is one of those things that needs constant chizuk, but I'm one of those people that needs constant encouragement and constant reminders and constant refocusing and constant reorienting. And constant hisorus and constant reminding that tefillah is one of those things that needs constant chizuk. We can have a yom yun every single day for the rest of our lives and then some, and it wouldn't even address the core need to be focused on tefillah. Ashreichem, I'm very fortunate to be a part of a yeshiva that's taking it head on. And as always, Roshan is out in front of the most important things and providing the right opportunity. So I can't profess to have anything insightful to say because of my expertise at being a good davener. I don't know what that means exactly. I'm very good at struggling with tefillah. So happy to be here today to share a little bit with you. Rabbi Yosef Friedenson. Anybody ever hear of Rabbi Yosef Friedenson? Okay, great. It was worth coming to Yerushalayim and sharing this one. Rabbi Yosef Friedenson was one of the most extraordinary voices for Torah Jewry, world Jewry. Somebody who really provided in the world of journalism an authentic Torah perspective, Siddur Shavar. He's a lifelong Buddhist. Learned in major yeshivas before the Holocaust. And he said that he was not just a graduate of those yeshivas, but that he earned 7 degrees from 7 universities of pain, suffering, and hell on this earth. He literally went through 7 concentration camps during the war. He emerged as a person who was a symbol of emunah, perseverance, and really just a person with a shtick Yiddishkeit. Everything about him expressed Yiddishkeit and authentic Torah perspective. Yosef Friedensen shared one of his experiences when he was in Birkenau. He was with a friend named Aviezer, who was a Talmud of Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin. He said, like, it sounds crazy to say, but they actually hit the jackpot in terms of job assignments at a certain point when he was in Birkenau. Their job was to take a cart and schlep around all the different parts of the camp and collect the garbage. There's a garbage man. Most people wouldn't say that that's a great job. So, but for him, it afforded a certain ability to be mobile, to be almost out of the spotlight and avoid extra scrutiny. So there's a certain level of flexibility. They were going place to place. They would go past the kitchen and every so often are able to grab an extra scrap or two and be able to share it with those who really needed it. They had access to the warehouse. And they would go around the different parts of the camp. Describes that one day, the beginning of the cold season,
Yosef was with his friend Aviezer, and B'nai Yeshiva, two B'nai Torah, were schlepping pushing there this garbage cart. And the wind was blowing away, so he said it was variable. They were able to have a conversation. Usually when the wind was blowing toward them, they couldn't breathe from the smell of the refuse. The wind was blowing away from them, and they passed by the women's camp, the women's area, and there was a young girl who he later understood and identified as a young woman from Chus, town of Chus. And when she saw them, she kind of started just waved to them to get their attention. Well, strange, you don't risk life and limb to call attention to yourself or to kind of communicate with another person in that environment. But she started like waving over to them. And it was cool. She was like holding us. So he said, like what? And she started yelling in Yiddish from across, and it was hard to hear because the wind was blowing and the smell was wretched. But he said, she was saying, Shulde, excuse me, can you give me Kregen a Vetter? And they got close. Can you give me Kregen a Vetter? Can you give me a better sweater? It's cold. I felt like, okay, she must be nuts. Sweater. Nich case you get a sweater in Berkeley. But they just thought he was another desperate woman, another desperate person who couldn't. No choice but to have the screen out. They continued on their way. And he said that this Aviezer was like bothering. Like this young girl suffering in such a way. Something struck him. Later that day, when they passed by the warehouse, Aviezer, this Ben Torah from Tachman Lublin, ran into the warehouse, the back of the warehouse, as they were schlepping the garbage, and came out 2-3 minutes later, and he held up his prison uniform, and he showed Friedenson, that he had a sweater on. Now they were so emaciated, they were so thin, Rahman al-Atslan, they couldn't even tell that he was wearing a sweater underneath. But he was wearing it, it was martial like death, instant death, in the Nazi concentration camps. But he was Moser Nefesh for this girl, so that she wouldn't suffer. The next couple of days, they're walking around camp, he had the sweater on underneath his uniform, waiting for the opportunity to pass by that woman's area again. Maybe he'll see her there. Sure enough, she was outside a couple days later. And she again calls the woman and says, "You're with Craig and Yvette there." And Javier says, yeah. And he quickly, in the middle of the whole thing, takes off his shirt and pulls off the sweater. And like dashes over toward the fence and throws it over. And she's looking like this. She picks it up and like goes like this. What? And he's like, the brand wasn't the right color. Like, what's the? She picks it up and like looks at him like this. What? She says, "It's cold outside. It's cold. It's a sweater for you." She says, "What? But for what?" She said, "Just put it on quickly. You asked for a sweater." And she says, "No." I asked, "Is he ever cooking a sitter?" I asked for a sitter. They couldn't hear her. And
Josef Friedensen said at that moment, after months and months and months in concentration camps, he completely said he lost himself, he lost his sense of who he was. He remembered that there's such a thing that's more fundamental than feeling warm, feeling protected, than being well fed, than sleeping. Something more fundamental than human touch to a Jew, more fundamental than a sweater in the winter. He couldn't even fathom that this girl was asking for such a thing. That this girl wanted a sitter? Said from that day on, as they schlepped the garbage, whenever the wind was blowing away, because when the wind was blowing toward them, they weren't able to daven. They wouldn't just chit chat. They would daven together, word by word. They'd start with Moda Ani, or Matovu, and they would daven word by word the entire day, walking around Birkenau, schlepping garbage, daven. He said he never forgot the little girl, the 15-year-old girl from Klust, reminded him that there's something so fundamental and essential to the life of a Jew, even more so than staying warm in the winter. Tefillah la'ani kiyato felifnei Hashem yishpoch sicha. Davin HaMelech and Tehillim. The Gemara describes the different forms of tefillah, the different ways of approaching a Kodesh Baruch Hu, the different ways that a Jew comes before God, tefillah. One of those modalities is called tefillah la'ani. The prayer, the tefillah of someone who is poor, someone who doesn't have his lack, someone who doesn't have a sweater when it's warm, God forbid, or food to eat, or a bed to sleep in, or money to pay their bills. Someone who's poor, who's an ani. Tefillah la'ani, kiyato, who feels faint, who feels afflicted, who comes before God and cries out before Hashem to fill that need. Lifnei Hashem yishpoch sicha, pours out their need. It's almost instinctive. There's a different modalities of coming before God from a place of wanting, of needing. Of, I don't have A, I don't have B, I don't have C, I don't have something that I need. I want to dwell in this tent. I want this person to find favor in front of this person's eyes. I want to succeed in such and such an area. I'm looking for this human need to be fulfilled. I come before God as someone who is asking, please God, provide for me. Tefillah la'ani. And the more desperate we feel, the more dependent we feel, the more intensive that prayer can be, the more that cry for help is. That's one way of davening. I mean, what are we going to do? Who are we going to ask other than the Ribono Shel Olam? Well, Shem Tov HaKadosh says, and this is what I was hoping to focus on for the few minutes we have together. Well, Shem Tov HaKadosh reframes this interpretation, reframes this cry from David HaMelech, a little bit of a different interpretation. And again, reframes the whole experience of what tefillah can be. Tefillah la'ani kiyat, la'atof, doesn't just mean to feel faint or to feel afflicted. La'atof means literally to wrap. And atifa means a wrapping. There's a modality, there's a form of tefillah where we enrobe ourselves, where we surround ourselves with a consciousness, with an awareness of God's presence, that we're standing not just before God, but that we're standing in Ribono Shel Olam. And that a Jew who is engaging in or trying to manifest their relationship with Ribono Shel Olam could do much more than just come before God and ask, come before God and request, come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and beg, plead, and cry out to fulfill a need. But the Baal Shem Tov explains that what's more essential, what's a higher level, what's a more sophisticated way of relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is coming to Ribono Shel Olam saying, Ribono Shel Olam, more than anything that I want from you is that I want you, that I want to be with you. David HaMelech says, Ba'ani, ask for me, Kirem HaSel Kirem Mikol. The main thing is to be close to you. Not for the fulfillment of something specific, some specific want or need, not for that money, that shidduch, that job, that sweater, though there's no one else to ask, no one else wants to depend on other than Hashem. If tefillah only goes that far, and it's the level of kiyatov, of this is what I need, and if I don't have it, I'm going to faint, I'm going to be lacking. Al Shem Tov says we haven't maximized our opportunity for his kashrus for connecting with Hashem. Kiyatov, when we turn to Hashem and say, I want to be enrobed, I want to be enclosed, I want to be surrounded by you, I want my every moment to be infused with your presence, tefillah becomes not something that we do, not just something that we are engaged in, not just something that we're involved with or working on, saying, but tefillah could then become something which is transcendent, we become enveloped in it, and it becomes what we are. As David HaMelech, the great davener, declared Ba'ani tefillah, I am prayer. What does it mean to go from someone who is davening, someone who is engaged in tefillah, to someone who is, in a more expansive way, enveloped, enrobed, surrounded by, encompassed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and living in an expansive way in a state of dveikus. Descartes, who was the 17th century philosopher that really, I mean, most of Western philosophy, you might remember from high school, most of Western philosophy is based on a lot of his usages. Descartes famously said that the essence of man are faculties of thought. I think, therefore I am. I think, therefore I am. In other words, my humanity, my sense of self, is expressed by the fact that I'm a thinker, a person who is able to have cognitive awareness, consciousness. Rav Zinger, in his introduction to his Sefer on Tefillah, that just came out recently, very worthwhile, says that, you know, that man being defined as a homo sapien, man being defined as someone who is a thinker, someone whose existence is meaningful because of our ability to think, to consider, to make cheshbonos, is really undermining the essential nature of man. And man as a homo sapien is really selling us very short. We're not a homo sapien as much as we're homo metpalalos. In other words, our humanity is expressed in the fact that we die. Not I think, therefore I am. I pray. I engage in tefillah, therefore I am. Let's just like this. When we talk about that, when we talk about tefillah, when I say tefillah, I'm going to play a little bit of that. We're going to get you involved. Okay? I say tefillah, I'm going to throw out a few words. I'm going to throw out a word, and just give me the first association that comes with. Okay? Ready? You ready? Makom kavua. Beit Midrash. Okay. Mincha. Midday. Shmon Esrei.
Holy.
Holy.
Yeah,
very good. Davening for the Amud. Awesome. Okay. Shachris.
Morning.
Okay. Let's try this one. Siddur. Okay. Very good. You know, when we get very linear when it comes to tefillah, we get very textbook when it comes to tefillah.
It's interesting. Jonathan Rieti. Do you remember Jonathan Rieti? Yeah? Very good. Okay. Matsu, your gateway is... He's a very insightful machanek. One of our generation really insightful machanek. Rieti was once speaking. I once heard him make an amazing presentation. He's literally been involved with thousands of talmidim over the years. And institutions, yeshivas, started schools, Montessori schools, creative modalities. And years ago, it was really one of the first, it was formally working with talmidim, with guys who are struggling in classic, the traditional mainstream type of educational institutions. Really one of the first was dealing with, you know, formally as what they call off the desk.
So he once heard him say a fascinating fact, a nugget, based on his years of firsthand experience. So that if you remove the tragic and horrific variable of abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, if you remove the variable of sexual or physical abuse from the question of why is it that people, that guys, that lead them, that people lead them, leave the fold and don't want the part of Orthodox or observant Judaism, you take out abuse. He said in his experience, it always comes down to the fact that people had a hard time with davening. Because from a young age, we have a feeling or a sense that in order to relate to Hashem, in order to engage the Ribono Shel Olam, in order to be somebody who is engaged in an active, healthy kesher with God and doing what you have to do to be a frum guy, you have to go to Shacharis and Mitzvah and Maariv, and you do. And you go to school, and I don't know what it's like in high school more recently, but it has to do with people go to davening, and do everything possible not to have to be a part of the davening service. Even to the extent that putting on a tefillin shalosh, people do something like this, and not on a tefillin shalyah. And there's a sense of davening being very frontal, and tiresome, and not relatable. And there's a text, and there's a liturgy, and this is what the sitter is, and you start from the beginning and you go to the end. And it was and there's constant discussions and meetings and conversations about, you know, ways to like get the kids involved in the davening, and way for the davening not to be miserable, and way for the davening not to be a hassle, and other words. Always the hit of kedusha, obviously, because it's too long. Always, I was already in 10th grade, so we always, it's on Monday and Thursday, the first paragraph and the last paragraph. Whatever, as opposed to the whole thing, because there's too much, it's too long. And if you walk into, and I'm not being presumptuous, but many of the shuls that many of us can walk through, we won't necessarily find the most uplifting experience or the most, you know, engaging or alive type of environment on a day-to-day basis. Maybe on young folk, people pick it up a little bit. You know, Shabbos is a young couple's meeting, that's a little bit shorter. There's always a good kiddush in the middle of it. I was like, davening is something which is challenging and difficult for everybody. I want to re-point it out that in his experience, if you get down to the core of it, and really ask, and you ask why and why and why and why and why, is people feel, what do I have with the Kodesh Bo? What does I have? What do I have with the Ribono Shel Olam? What kesher do I have with the Ribono Shel Olam? Hashem's interested in me. I'm certainly not a good servant of Hashem. I'm certainly not doing what I'm supposed to be. I'm certainly not performing up to snuff. I'm definitely not somebody who has earned the right to be called a Ben Torah or an Eved Hashem because my davening stinks. My shul is uninspiring. Or I don't understand the words of the sitter and I don't really invest the time enough to access them. Davening is the same thing every day. I go in and at best I'm kind of going in and punching the clock and checking the box and doing that to do all the motions. So that, you know, in high school, I don't get the bad attendance grade, I don't get in trouble, or I get older because that's what a religious person does, at best. So I'm going to punch in and punch out. And ka'cha ze yeh kol ha'chaim is what it's going to look like. Rabbi Yehuda said that the people have to say, like, chalas, because davening was so challenging for them, because it so didn't relate to the sitter, or felt laborious, or just exhausting, or uninspired, or they're disconnected from it, out went Yiddishkeit. When tefillah wasn't in place, tefillah wasn't thinking of, wasn't engaging or meaningful, that just led to a sense of being totally worn down and saying, well, I can't put up this farce. And I like it. Maybe I enjoy your life events, and maybe like to come to the Pesach Seder, and have a good, you know, enjoy Chant, like the Israel Day Parade, or whatever it may be that people have as part of their Yiddish Jewish expression. But if there's such an emphasis on tefillah, and tefillah, we're going to get up in the head constantly with tefillah, 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 our day is framed morning, afternoon, and night, you can't avoid it as a Ben Torah, as an Eved Hashem, you can't avoid formal davening, Shabbos Kamarit. So much a part of the experience. If it's not meaningful and we're not engaged with it, so Rabbi Yehudi said that he found over the years that was the cause. And it's a shame, and it's such a chaval. And it's such an unfortunate tragedy, because davening shachas minchamaru with a siddur, with a chazan and chazaras hashatz, starting from the beginning and going to the end, all the different stuff, is really just the baseline of davening. It's the obligation of davening. It's really just the beginning of davening. The mashal that's often shared is, you know, if you were to imagine, you know, the obligation to mark your girlfriend's birthday, your wife's birthday, your mother's birthday, an obligation to. If you don't, you know, something's off. So, the obligatory birthday card that you buy, if you find the good shoebox ones that aren't too perverse, you know, for $1.99 at CVS, so you hit the jackpot. Otherwise, you know, you spend a couple bucks and you get a Hallmark card, yeah? Roses are red, violets are blue, it's your birthday, and I love you. Now, if you imagine giving that Hallmark card, it's my next step in my career.
You imagine you just gave that Hallmark card, you put that card in an envelope and just handed it to your mother or handed it to your significant other without writing anything inside, without any type of personal expression, without filling in that white, you know, the white that's around the black letters. It's kind of standard. Now, are you desiring the fact that you remember the birthday, the fact that you made the effort to buy the card and do what you have to do and give it to them?
Yeah, of course. But would anybody imagine that's all there is to it? Or is there the white space around those black letters that's left for us to express ourselves and share a word of appreciation and thanks, or just of being close, just expressing that, you know, this relationship is meaningful, is really what the essence is. In other words, all of the siddur and everything that Anshei Knesset HaGdola and the reflecting divine wisdom put together as a system for us to engage Hashem, so that we cover all the bases of our human, and social, and religious, and emotional needs, and connect, and don't forget the world, and don't forget our parents, and don't forget to say thank you, and don't forget to say I'm sorry. That checklist called Shabbos Mincha Maariv, which is our obligation, which is our chiyuv, our mitzvah of coming to Hashem, Mechol Lavav is just the beginning. Avodah Shebelev has a levush, has a garment, has an external, as an exoskeleton called the siddur. No one would imagine that handing that blank card is enough, or is meaningful in and of itself beyond just like fulfilling the obligation. And it's true. It takes effort to show up, and it takes effort to show up in a way that you are present and prepared and ready. And it's true to understand the words of davening for someone who's raised in the Western society like most of us. It's challenging because for most of us it's not our mom language. And it's true to relate to some of the patterns in tefillah sometimes are a little obtuse. And it's true, it takes a little bit of a Rosh Gadol to think about Jewish history and to think about the meta-patterns of Mashiach and our ultimate fixing of the world. It does take a little bit of effort, and it does take a little bit of digging deep. That's true. But even if we were to do all of that, we wouldn't be accomplishing the goal of fulfilling the purpose of why the Ribono Shel Olam programmed us in such a way. Because we're not Homo sapiens. We're not just, our existence is not meaningful because we think. Our existence is meaningful because we're engaged in tefillah. Or to borrow from the Baal Shem Tov, our existence is meaningful because we are a tefillah. And the more expansive we're able to see the role of tefillah in our life. And again, I'm getting stuck in that, I think, the role of tefillah. In other words, tefillah is something that I do. I go check in, so I fill up my tank with gas, you know, in the mornings that I have delek to go through the day. And I decide, next time to fill it up, so I have a little more delic, a little more petrol, diesel fuel to make it through the next couple hours, and fill up again, tomorrow to make it through the night. That's one way of seeing our obligation, and that's one way of seeing our functionality. And that's okay. The more expansive we're able to see our way of relating to Hashem as being homo nekalos, we exist as an expression of tefillah.
So the more light it will shine into those letters, into the formality.
When Martin Luther King Jr. went to Selma and was engaged in the struggle for civil rights in the mid-60s, so Abraham Joshua Heschel, of blessed memory, went to Selma to march with King. It's part of the civil rights movement. He was in Jewish Theological Seminary. He was an ainikel from the Oy Yisrael, from Africa. He was a leader in American Jewry. When he came back from marching with Dr. King, at the forefront there, the famous picture of them walking, that was all over the news, the big Kiddush Hashem. So they asked Dr. Heschel, so, you know, what did you do in Selma? There's all these ministers and clergymen. He said, did you pray together? And Heschel's response was, in Selma, we prayed with our feet. They marched. It was a march. Activism itself was an expression of tefillah. Mr. Rogers was a Presbyterian minister, Al Vashalom, one of my first rebbes. Mr. Rogers was one of the great mashpiyim of the generation. Over the course of close to 40 years, he broadcast thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of public television. All of it was about values, about menschlichkeit, midos tovos. All of it was about living an ethical and wholesome life. All of it was done with Yishuv Hadas. And all of it was done with the express purpose of bringing godliness into the American home. That was his express purpose. But on public television, he never mentioned God once. But he said in an interview years and years ago, I read basically and watched every interview that you could find in the world about Mr. Rogers. I was in touch with his wife a couple of years ago. Here at the firefighter. Mr. Rogers said that when he went to work every morning, he composed all the songs that were on his television show, and he wrote all the scripts, and he even designed all the puppets. He said, every single moment of my work, writing the songs, making the puppets, writing the screenplays, and interacting with the children, was an act of prayer. He saw his shlichus in the world, the message he was giving over, the education, in a prayerful way. Sure, he did his meditations in the morning. Sure, he did his lahavdil, his shachas min chamar. But if our interaction with Ribono Shel Olam is limited, so to speak, in a formal sense, we check in at shachas, we check in at mincha, we check in at chamar, it will lack the vitality, it will lack the reach and the depth of the way a Kodesh Baruch Hu programmed us. So Yehuda Levi said that but a Jew without davening is like a body without food. The same way the food sustains the body, prayer sustains the soul. But it doesn't just sustain the soul. Tefillah, prayer, is what gives our soul its expression in the world. Rav Kook writes that we get stuck. We get stuck in this smallness. We limit ourselves the way we imagine ourselves and our interaction with Kodesh Baruch Hu, and it becomes something which is very unnatural. And then Rabbi Yehudi, I think this is what Rabbi Yehudi was referring to. We feel it's unnatural, it's too difficult, and I'm not good at it, so why should I do it? It undermines the natural kesher we have with Kodesh Baruch Hu. Cook writes that the neshama is tamid mitpalelet. The neshama is constantly in a state of prayer. We wake up in the morning, we're davening, we're in a state of tefillah. We're in a state of yearning for Hashem. Our desire to have meaningful relationships with friends and with members of the opposite gender is an expression of tefillah, the soul's need, yearning to connect. The same way a plant, Cook writes, is heliotropic, it's always turning toward the sun, no matter where it's growing and how it's being blocked or shaded out, the plant is constantly trying to find some ray of sunlight. A Jew is constantly yearning and trying every which way, like a flame, no matter how we hold it, it's constantly yearning upward. The soul of a Jew, us, me, you and I, are constantly yearning to manifest our relationship with Hashem Yisrael. We have different formal cues throughout the day. Ma'ashem al-techa dorish, 100 brachas a day, may Hashem al-dorish, 100 times a day to make these formal brachas, to be megala, to reveal a formal expression of God in our lives. Chakras, mincha, mar, musaf, amash, chodesh, shabbos, and yontif, to formally express and manifest that. But that poem in the Hallmark card, the words that Anshei Knesset Hagadola established in the Siddur, are illuminated and are become meaningful when we live prayerfully, not during those times. When we play with our feet, when we're playing ball and exercising, you're playing ball and going for a jog, when that is an expression of tefillah, when we recognize that our desire to have a healthy body, or our desire to have a good supper, or to take a nap, or to go see the world is an expression of our soul's yearning toward light, toward Kadosh Baruch Hu, toward self-expression, toward self-actualization. Then it's much more than I'm just checking in with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, reminding God that I exist, reminding myself that God exists, and here's what I need to pick up from the Makolet, becomes something much more expansive. That our entire day becomes an expression of the soul, an expression of our desire for Kirbas Elokim. That's what David HaMelech might have meant, the Ani Tefillah. David HaMelech didn't have a sitter. The whole world was David HaMelech's sitter. Every experience that David went through in his life, personally, professionally, all the ups and all the downs and everywhere he went, kol atzmosai, tomarna, Hashem mikamocha, his entire body, his entire self, became an expression of prayer, of tefillah. The Gemara Brachos tells us, halavai, a person should be mispalel, kol ayom kol, a person wants to daven all day. What does it mean to daven all day? You need to schlep out. There's a beautiful Beis Medrash in Bar Park that daven in sometimes. Munas Yisrael, like much wolves. Zochus spent Shabbos with a couple of times when he was married. You know, when you walk into the Beis Medrash, they hand you, you know, if you're a guest, they hand you a sitter, they hand you a chumash, and they say the svarim there on the back wall if you're interested in the svarim. I have to look at the svarim, we're going to daven. Pesukim Zimra is that long. You hear Wolfson speak? He speaks very slowly, very methodically. It's like counting priceless jewels, every single word. It's that long. So if you're davening 3 minyanim a day at Emunas Yisrael Bar Park by Wolfson, which is the longest schlepped up Pesukim Zimra in the world, and it's beautiful, it's still not all day. People go to Kol El Seder, or they go to work, or they go to teach, or they go to do whatever they go to do. Halavai yuspalo kol yom. How is it possible? Halavai yuspalo kol yom. The Gemara is trying to tell us is davening is not just something that we do during davening. Don't daven. Tefillah is much more than davening. What does davening mean anyway? Whether it comes from some Latin root, or it comes from a word that's based on English, of divine, or some would say that it's Aramaic. The avos, meaning being drawn from the avos, or it's an exclusively Yiddish word, implication that davening is what we do formally. It's what we do formally, 3 times a day. But it's during those in-between times, when the neshama is consistently and constantly being mitpalelet, calling out, wanting chibur, wanting connection, wanting God consciousness, God awareness, like sunlight, like a plant is desperate for sunlight and water, the soul is desperate for this, for debate. It's desperate for us to be aware of the fact that we're enveloped, surrounded, enrobed, and clothed by a Kodesh Baruch Hu every single moment. The sitter is just the baseline. Shachas Mincha Maariv is the obligation, it's the opportunity, but it's just the beginning. Rabbi Weinreb, Rabbi Tzurish Weinreb, one of my great teachers, one of my mentors, Rabbi Weinreb is really one of the Chachmei HaDor, the wise men of a generation. Everyone's talking about this, and he said, you know, we talk a lot about God, we talk a lot about Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Ribono Shel Olam. That he always felt a certain, you know, yiras haromos, Kodesh Baruch Hu, distance from the Ribono Shel Olam, the master of the world, Holy One, blessed be He, the Almighty, the All-Knowing. He said he kind of felt at a certain point of life, he realized that by this awesome way of seeing the greatness of God, he thought he was doing himself a favor over here, building up this yiras haromos. He said he kind of also at the same time caused an unintended distance. So he said that in his own personal practice, he began referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to God, as the Bashefer. Yiddish is the Bashefer. Bashefer means in Yiddish, one who's giving, who's bestowing, who's taking care of. Like the greatest gift Chazal tell us that we have, that Hashem gave us, is that we're able to talk to, approach, relate to Hashem, and speak to Hashem b'lashon nochach, baruch atah, you. The way one doesn't talk to the Rebbe Muvah,
we can talk to Hashem.
To speak to Hashem in first person, present, b'lashon nochach, sometimes the formality of Ribono shel Olam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shachris Mincha Maariv, can create an unintentional subconscious distance, and that would be tragic. The most important thing that I could share as we're going to break in Daf Mincha is that as meaningful as these meetings are, and as important as they are, and we had it every day, all day, it still wouldn't be enough. It's not enough to talk about God. It's not enough to talk about the Bashefer, Ravinu Shabashemayim. Not enough to talk about Hashem as a father, Hashem as a king, Hashem as the provider of the sweater, Hashem as the provider of the parnasa, or the shidduch. Not enough to come before God as an ani, or even to be enrobed and enclosed, so to speak, by an expansive sense of everything we're doing being an expression of the soul and the essential self, living with the notion of ani tefillah. We have to just also talk to Hashem. Same way that we speak to our friend, what's going on. In the same way that we connect with people through speech, talk to Hashem. During davening, to talk to Hashem. After davening, to talk to Hashem. To speak to Hashem in our own words, in our own time, in the morning, in the noon, and at night, no specific time, no scripted time, is the greatest gift that the Ribono Shalom has given us. It's the white space between those black letters. The fact that we have an Hashama Mekalela Tetmidius in a constant and consistent way. And then we have the ability to express that all the time, anytime. By filling those empty spaces of our day, walking to the Makolet on your way to morning Seder, on the way down to the dining room, during the meal with friends playing ball, and while we're learning, to speak to Hashem, to talk to Hashem. I don't tell our kids to go davening. I never tell my kids to go davening. I never say I'm going to daven. I'm going to talk to Hashem. It's in the formal context of fulfilling my obligation. I'm going to Shachris now. I'm going to Beis Medrash. I'm going to Shul. I'm going to talk to Hashem. We have the opportunity to talk to Hashem, to express our true selves, our most essential core human need. More than we need anything else, more than we need a sweater in the cold, more than we need food or a bed to sleep in, we must express our humanity by turning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in tefillah. Not so much, I pray, therefore I am. It's, I am, therefore I pray. It's the most basic and fundamental expression of who we are. And we have a great privilege to be able to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu every single moment of our lives, when we're awake, and when we're sleeping, when we're eating, when we're working, certainly when we're learning Torah, and even when we're about to daven mincha now as well. Hashem should be mezaka us, zilcha, to daven together, to pray together, to mispalat together, to yearn together, and to talk with us together.